Warning: The Mended Futures podcast contains stories told by guests that may be sensitive to some people. Viewer and listener discretion is advised. The opinions expressed by guests do not reflect the views of the hosts and/or producers of this podcast.
Okay, everyone. This episode is so good. I thoroughly enjoyed talking to Sean and Aaron Mills. They are seasoned veterans in fostering. They've adopted a couple children, and they just really personify what it means to be a part of a team. I was really inspired by how they consider every single part of the process of fostering and how everyone is on the same team, including the biological parents of the children they foster.
Mm-hmm. And there are some tangible ways that people in the community can come alongside foster parents like the Mills. So I'm excited for you to listen so you can figure out your place on the river.
Mm-hmm. We hope you enjoy.
Everybody, it's pretty windy outside, but you won't be able to tell in our studio.
Mm-hmm.
But you might be able to tell if we look a little flustered.
If don't say anything about our guests, but if our hair, mine and Allison's hair, is windswept,
yes, just if we look windblown.
Yes, exactly.
I'm not sure what season we're doing today.
No,
but here in the studio, it's warm, and we've got a couple of guests today.
Yes, we have two guests.
Yes. The couch is full.
Yeah. Today we have Sean and Aaron Mills. So if you guys want to introduce yourselves.
Yeah. My name is Sean. And I am a pastor here in the local Lynchburg area. Work at Waymaker Church. And I get to lead all of our outreach. So everything we do from a local standpoint to a global standpoint and our counseling programs. And what we get to do really within the world of foster care and adoption. So that kind of is part of my job and job description. And so I've been at the church for about 9 years. Love what I get to do. Love helping people and being in the community.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
And I'm Aaron. And Sean's wife. And after about 22 years in the field of education, I recently took a position at the Center for Financial Literacy at LU. And I have the privilege to help what we say ignite generational change through the practical application of biblical financial wisdom with about 30 college students. So we lead the way in helping bring financial wisdom to all of the students that are on campus, as well as some faculty, staff, and local community members.
I love that. That could be a whole podcast episode in and of itself.
Yeah. We've had a few guests who work in helping people with financial literacy. Yeah.
I don't think we do, and I'm saying we, all families, do a good enough job explicitly talking about finances. Mm-hmm. It's a taboo subject. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times kids get pushed out of the nest or they fly out of the nest and mm-hmm. they don't have those skills, or we haven't talked about how to do money.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I love, because I was reading a little bit more about you guys and the idea of Mended Futures. And a lot of times there's a big connection between finances and the mental health situation. Mm-hmm. And so when those intersect, and then we say, hey, how can we ignite generational change by giving them some practical steps from a biblical perspective? Mm-hmm. It's just really cool to see how God can use that to bring about not just a financial change, but also a heart change. Yes. And so we say that behavior follows belief. And so we love talking about that.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. And I think about, like, for me personally, how my life would have been different, how our marriage would have been different if financial literacy was required when I was in high school, mm-hmm. like Absolutely. It is in the state of Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, it just would have made a huge difference to, like, actually have that training and knowledge and mm-hmm. all of those pieces coming into it. So,
wow. So how did you two meet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
funny story.
We actually met in college.
First met way back in high school. We just didn't know that we were meeting.
That is true. Yeah.
Wait, explain.
He was in a band.
So it was not love at first sight.
No.
Okay.
We didn't actually know each other at all at that point in time. No. Yeah. I was playing in a band at that point in time, and cool. we just happened to play at her dad's church. at an event that they were doing. And I was in college. She was finishing her senior year in high school.
And dating someone else that liked his band.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So are you still in a band?
I'm not.
Yeah. Would you like to sing anything today?
I'm good.
He could.
Yes. Singing,
are you sure?
Singing was not my thing.
Well, yeah, okay. What role did you play?
Yeah, what are you?
Guitar player.
Nice.
I still get the opportunity from time to time to play with our church and cool. do some stuff like that.
Okay.
But yeah, those days are long gone. Yeah.
So. They don't have to be.
Hey, yeah, you come down to my basement, you can find my guitars. There's all kinds of fun that happens
okay.
down there.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so,
wonderful.
Yeah, so we met really in college. So yeah, we were in the same space for that one particular evening. But we met in college, and the interesting thing is, for a lot of the people who are in the Lynchburg area, yeah, there's a lot of people that are part of Liberty University. So we're like one of the few people that came to Lynchburg, not because of Liberty University, at least initially.
But we're still Christians.
be clear.
It is true. But we were at Kirsten Newman College in Tennessee, just outside of Knoxville. And so the short version of the story is that guy who she was dating, eventually he came to campus as well. And he became my roommate, because we just had the music thing in common.
No way.
And
I wasn't dating him at the time. We had already broken up. Uh-huh. So,
yeah. But there was the mutual
connection.
Yeah, yeah.
So he kind of introduced me to her, and that's kind of where we met.
He even was in our wedding. So,
wow. Oh, good. Pretty, so it was a happy.
Good, happy relationships there.
That seems healthy. That's good.
Yes. Yeah. And we went kind of back and forth. I think initially I was more interested in us dating than she was. and so I did everything I could to try and pursue her. Yeah, I finally convinced her to go out on a date with me. But the only way she would go out on this date is if we did a group date together.
Mm-hmm. He did have blue hair. Uh-huh. I mean, like spiky blue hair.
That's very part smart of, a band. Of you, though.
Yeah. So I,
it wasn't a no. It was let's try something different.
So she agreed to go with me with some friends to go ice skating. The difficult part is the day before we were supposed to have our first date. It was right before New Year's Eve. That day before, I was out. I was snowboarding with my friends, and I tore my MCL snowboarding.
No.
The problem was I knew this date was coming, and I thought I may only have one shot at this, so I didn't tell anybody. Just showed up to the skating rink with this
very black and blue leg
injury, and we skated, and I did whatever I could, and
wow,
that was it.
And my friends approved.
Yeah.
So yeah, did you feel honored that he would risk an injury to go on a date with you?
It was a fun date. We had a really good time, and I definitely understood his commitment level.
So I feel like we, the viewers, might need proof that you had blue spiky hair.
So maybe, find a picture.
Yes, maybe if you could email us proof of that. So you've known each other for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A few decades.
Yes.
This is fast forwarding a little bit. How and when did you decide that fostering children was something that you wanted to do?
Yeah, and that's a really interesting question. I'll start if you don't care. I, growing up, always wanted to take care of children. And so it was kind of ingrained in me that something with children was going to be in my future. I didn't know what that was going to be. But in college, there was a little bit of a dream of like maybe moving to an orphanage. And prior to meeting Sean, I wasn't sure, where I would go after college, and thought maybe I would move somewhere where I would work with an orphanage or work with children or have a lot of children ourselves. There were lots of ideas. Then met Sean, and we started to proceed. When we realized that God was calling us to be married, I think it was like, well, where are we headed together? And you have to unite your paths a little bit. And so that took, both of us changing a little bit of our course, and both of us were headed to seminary. Sean was headed to seminary, really, and I found out that I could go as well and get my degree, and had a little bit of help with that, like somebody kind just kind of helped donate that for me, which was precious. And so we just started working on our degrees. And Sean fell in love with camp ministry. He had a background in that. So he was working with some camp ministry stuff. And our lives just moved into ministry in that aspect. Mm-hmm. And I really left the thought of ever working with children in that capacity. I was still a teacher working with children every day. We had our own children. We had three kids. And life was busy. It was hard. We were in ministry in the thick of camp ministry, which is a whole nother conversation.
It sure is.
But it just felt like, hey, we have our three kids. I'm done at three. I don't think I want to have any more. Let's get rid of all of our baby stuff, you know. And Sean, I don't know if he recalls exact moment or not, but I really remember he had to go in for a bit of a surgery. He was under anesthesia, coming out of anesthesia. And he says to me, hey, I just think we should consider foster care, you know, or adoption of some kind. And I'm like, oh, honey, you're coming out of anesthesia. You don't know what you're talking about. There's no way this is real. And then a little bit later, he started pushing back with the same conversation.
Wow.
And then at the same time, our church was starting to do a program, and I'll let Sean kind of take over from there.
Yeah. So for me, the big wrestle, like I just started wrestling with James 1:27 and just the idea that like you look throughout all of scripture and like there's one place where God's word says this is what pure religion looks like. Mm-hmm. And the truest form of religion is to look after the fatherless and the widows. And so for me, it was like, man, if God's saying that's what religion looks like, I have to start wrestling through, like, what part do I have to play in this? And like Aaron said, at the time that I was wrestling through this and thinking, man, this is the path that I think we're supposed to go as a family. To be honest, back to your original question, I never in 100 years could have imagined saying yes to this.
Wow.
Yeah. I couldn't imagine loving a kid that wasn't my biological kid. Mm. Yeah. Honestly, I looked back at the foster families that I remembered growing up and I thought they were usually weird, socially awkward. Yeah, I didn't want to be that family. The truth is now, like, I know on the other side that those families are constantly navigating trauma. And so everything in their life is going to look different and it's not going to look like a normal family would look. And so
can I pause you there?
Mm-hmm.
As a parent in the thick of raising adolescents, I think we're all weird and socially awkward.
For sure.
Yeah.
And now that I know what it's like, I, as a former educator, I would go on an apology tour for all the things I thought I knew. I didn't know that telling someone to brush their teeth could ruin their entire day.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's something when you're not in it, you think, wow, why do parents always look like that?
Sure.
I get it.
Yep. And you can
yes,
see it.
Absolutely.
I get it.
Yeah. So we're navigating that. And around the same time, our church here in Lynchburg in the Forest area, Waymaker Church, we felt this call on our church body to say there is a need in our community, and that is to take care of the foster care families and those families that are doing adoption, kinship placement. And so we started a ministry called Mosaic, where we just said, hey, we're going to intentionally, in some key ways, love on these families that are saying yes to foster care and adoption. It started initially with us doing our bags program, our meals program, and our night out program. And so we would fill bags, give them to social services so that when that kid gets placed into care, he has something that he can call his own. We would do meals for those families when they're making that transitional period and saying yes to welcoming in new kids into their home. And then we would do night outs where families could get around the table and they could just share life and realize, hey, yeah, I'm not alone in this. And there are other people who are experiencing the same thing. So that was kind of the initial call. But along with that, we just said, man, as a church, what would it look like if we could impact that community by our family saying yes? And so now there's a dual component there. These kids are getting love, but they're also getting Jesus in the in the picture. And so when you have a family that's a part of the church that loves Jesus, now that's being translated to those kids that you're welcoming in. And so with all those things kind of in our world happening around us, it was like God was just clearly saying like, hey, we want you to take this next step. And we want you to say yes, even if you don't know exactly what that's going to look like.
That's powerful. So what did your experience end up being like? How sort of prepared or unprepared did you feel to go into what you were going into?
Yeah, so I think it depends on the different kids that were in the room. So anybody who's been a foster parent knows that, like, there's various levels of trauma and things that every kid has experienced that, you know, make some kids easier, some kids more difficult. A 6-month-old may look very different than a 12-year-old, right? And so you have to navigate that. And so I just remember our very first call after we said yes. Aaron had mentioned it, that we had said we're done with kids. We had gotten rid of all the baby stuff. And we had two girls and one boy. Our son was the oldest. And so we kind of wanted to bring balance to the force in our house. And so we just said, like, we want a boy in the 5 to 7 year old range that's close to our son. So we have two girls, two boys. It'll be perfect. We'll kind of navigate this. And so we got that first call, and DSS or social services says, we know it's not exactly what you're looking for, but we've got a 6-month-old girl. She's in the hospital right now. She was in the hospital because she had a skull fracture, and mom couldn't tell them how it happened. And they said, we're not sure what we're going to do, but if we remove her, would you guys be up for saying yes? And we had to pause for a second in that moment, because it was like, we had no baby supplies.
Right. You had just gotten rid of all cribs,
any of the things. And so we just said, man, we're going to pray about this. Give us a few minutes. We'll call you back. We prayed about it. We just felt.
It didn't take very long. We were like, yes.
Yeah. We felt that we were supposed to say yes. Yeah. And so we called social services back and just said, hey, if you decide to place this girl into care, we would love to take her in. And social services said, great, we'll be there in 2 hours.
Yeah.
Wow. And it was like crazy. So we went from like no infants, no toddlers, graduating everybody out of diapers, to now we've got a 6-month-old. Wow. But that part of the journey was really, really incredible. Mm-hmm. But then we moved along, and we said yes to some other things, and eventually other things became adoption and all that stuff. And it wasn't as easy.
No, and I would say in foster care, everything you think you know or you think you're prepared for, even if you've done it before, like we had, the minute that this new child enters your home, all of a sudden it's brand new and nothing what you expected, and you know absolutely nothing. The details are very small. And so your challenge is like, we don't even know who's coming into our home. We don't know what it's going to look like. We don't know what challenges they're going to be facing. And a lot of it is just learn as you go. And so I think you have to be flexible, and you have to rely on your support and rely on the Holy Spirit and prayer and just asking God to give you wisdom and support when you need it. Because that preparation side, I just, in my experience, don't feel like there is really any preparation you can do to fully know what you're going to experience. There is a level of preparation and knowledge that you receive through training that certainly helps, but some things are just as you go. You're navigating that together as parents, as a family. We had three biological children, so our own children had to navigate what bringing in other children looked like in their space and the things that came with that. So our whole season, I guess, with the first little baby taught us a lot, but then new children coming in was just a completely different story and teaching us new things. And then we actually just recently, we've had a couple this year. So we had a little infant and a 6-year-old at the beginning in the fall. And then that was a very short stint. And we had these two new ones just recently come in. And it's, I mean, with all of the experience that we've had and all of the years that we've had working with kids with trauma and understanding where they're coming from, we're still navigating things right now with questions and wondering what could we do better? How could we be better parents? And really heavily relying on outside resources and people as a support.
And we've been doing foster care for about 15 years now. And the thing that I'm always careful, because I want this to translate, the social workers and caseworkers that we are working with, they are doing everything they can to equip us. the truth is, like, just sometimes there is not enough textbook material that can equip you for some of the things that you're going to handle. Like, how do you train somebody to know what to do when you're standing in Walmart and your 6-year-old daughter is screaming at the top of her lungs that she hates you and that, you know, she wants everybody to know that you're hurting her when she's just standing there because she's trying to get that attention. Like, those things are very difficult. And even, I know sometimes it can be easy as a foster parent to get frustrated with caseworkers because it's like, hey, if you would have told me this, I might not have said yes. And now we're into this. And the truth is, like, these caseworkers are, they're figuring this out as they go the same way that we are. And so they have a limited bit of knowledge. And so, you know, in this season right now that we're in with the 4 and 5-year-old that we have taken in, it's like, man, I am so grateful for our caseworkers who are working alongside of us to help provide supports for us. And I know that they don't know all of the answers and they don't know everything that these kids have experienced. Because truthfully, the kids haven't said, you know, what's been going on. And so I'm grateful for them to come alongside of us and give us whatever details they can. And I know when they do training, they do everything they can to try to equip you. But like Aaron said, there's just some things that you just have to experience and figure out, how do I move forward? And so we navigated a lot of that. We have 2 girls that we adopted that we got when they were 5 and 9. In that range. And they've been with us for 10 years. And that 10-year season was, man, it was a difficult season for us, where we navigated unpacking trauma that they had experienced and trying to figure out how we're going to love on them and how we're going to care for them. And even if I can be like transparent and vulnerable, like navigating, looking at these children that you're supposed to love and care for, and you're welcoming them into their home. But how do you like see them with the eyes of Christ and that love and not see them as the problems and the trauma that they're presenting to you? And for me, that was a really difficult thing to say. Like I would say, I love you, but like in my heart, do I mean that when those words come out of my mouth? And getting to that place where it's like, I don't ever want to look at a kid and see them as trauma. But when you're dealing with it in your home and you're face to face with it, it becomes very easy to do that. And so we had to, as a family, we had to navigate, how are we going to do that? And how are we going to best help our kids and love them the way that we would love, you know, our 3 biological kids that we had before we started all this process.
I want to ask you a couple of questions before we move farther. Can you talk a little bit about fostering, you know, fostering love and biological love? Because I know people who are listening, there are so many people in our community that are waiting until they're ready. I know dozens of people who've said out loud to me, I would love to foster, but I think people are waiting until they're ready. And I use humor as my coping mechanism. You're never ready. You're never ready for kids. They, you know, you get ready with them and you learn how to do it. So can you talk a little bit about, if you have biological children and you're fostering, what does a love for a foster child look like? What does love for adoptive child, biological child? And I also want you to talk a little bit about, as much as you're comfortable, what's it like for that child to leave your home? Because
I was going to ask the same.
Right. And reconciliation is the goal. And lots of times children want to be with their parents. So can you talk a little bit about being a foster parent, especially when you know they're not going to stay very long?
Sure. Well, for your first question, I think it's interesting. We often are trying to analyze how are we treating the biological versus the ones that we've taken into our home. And even on the flip side, how are they navigating with each other, right? And it's funny, just recently was talking to somebody about fostering and they said, you know, I'm interested in fostering, but I have my own kids and I don't want to ruin my own kids now. And I get it. I understood it. It also was like, ooh, is that an attack on me? You know, because, and it wasn't, it was not in any ill intent, but I've often struggled with that. Like, have I ruined my biological children? Mm-hmm. And even now there are some things that I see in my biological children that they are probably facing as a result of our choices mm-hmm. that they didn't ask for. Mm-hmm. And we've had some serious conversations about that. And so there are some struggles with it. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate to be at a conference with finance, with Kingdom Advisors in Florida, and sat next to somebody doing ministry, doing stuff with gospel patrons and supply line and things like that. And they just said to me, only God can help you in that area. Like, if you're doing what God's calling you to mm-hmm. do, then His Holy Spirit is guiding you to do that. Then He will help you feel peace in that. And in the same point, He is navigating, taking care of all of your children, mm-hmm. all of them together. And it's ultimately them and Christ, right? We are the vessels here to help raise them, and we're doing the best we can. And as long as we are doing what God has called us to do and operating out of His Spirit, then hopefully we're driving them in the right direction. And so that gave me a little bit of peace and hope. But we have a lot of serious conversations. We had a lot of conversations. And I think being open and communicating and being accepting of all the feelings. So when our oldest adopted daughter came into our care, there was some battle with, you treat them differently than you treat me, or I feel differently than, mm-hmm. you know, than they seem to feel with you. And I just said, you're right. I probably do. And the same way, you're probably struggling with how to treat me as mom because I'm not your real mom. Mm-hmm. And now seeing that it was both ways, mm-hmm. like it's not just one way. Mm. We are struggling with it a little bit, but she is also struggling with that and what that looks like for her having to call me mom. Mm-hmm. And so there have been times where she's like, I don't want to call you mom. You know, that's mm-hmm. fine. You don't have to, but it's going to take you time to warm up to me. In the same way, it's going to take us time to warm up to you. And so we're both going to struggle with that. And it was hard because we got them in May, and right, it was on one of our other daughter's birthday. So we were celebrating birthday. They came right to the birthday party with us.
Wow.
And, you know, my biological daughter had to give up her birthday to welcome them in. But mm-hmm. also they had to enter into a very precious family moment that felt hard for them. Mm-hmm. And then just a week later after that, it was Mother's Day. And mm-hmm. here's all of the weight of what does Mother's Day look like for them. So there are challenges with that, but it's just being open, communicating, and being honest. Like, these feelings are normal. They're real. They're okay. Mm-hmm. You can be mad. You can be frustrated. You can not want to call me mom. And I'll understand it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, with our biological kids, we did struggle with, like, what is this going to look like for them? What's the long-term effects? And I had a mentor who was a little bit further along in the journey, and him and his wife had decided to foster when his kids were a little bit older. And I just remember, like, wrestling that out with him. And the thing that he told me is, he said, you will never exemplify the love of Christ to your children more than by saying yes to foster care and adoption. Mm. When you think about literally what Jesus did for us, He adopted us in the midst of our chaos and our sin, and He welcomed us into His family as sons and daughters. And that's what we get to exemplify to our kids every single day. Yeah, to say, like, man, Jesus did this for us. And because He did this for us, we need to do the same. And it's been interesting because we've had conversations with our kids, even about the future and what they would do. So we sat around a table and just had a kind of a round table discussion and just said, hey, in the future, do you guys think that, like, you would ever be foster parents? Of our full-time kids, 4 out of the 5 said yes.
Wow.
The only person who said no was our son, and he's our oldest. And he just said, I know that there is a call on a believer's life to take care of the fatherless. And I feel like I answered that call by being a part of this family for 20 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I cannot argue with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then our oldest daughter, who we adopted, for her, she was like, there was a family that welcomed me in the midst of my, you know, my difficulties and all the things that were going on, and they loved on me. And so because of that, I feel like there's something that I have to give back to these kids that potentially could do it. And so we're just creating that heart. And so, mm-hmm. It's been a journey. And to the second part of that question, you know, it really, the navigation of releasing kids for us has been, it's been a growth process, I feel like. So when the first 6 month old that we took in came into our world, she was with us from around like 6 to 18 months. And so like every major development that happens in a child's life happens in that window. You know, she's eating solid foods and she's walking and she's starting to talk and say, you know, all these things. And when eventually an aunt and uncle stepped in to take care of them, and eventually she went home to them, there was real sadness and grief in our home. There was sadness and grief with our kids. They were much younger at that point in time. Yeah. But they felt like they lost a sister. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we navigated that and processed that. And it was like, man, this is really, really difficult and challenging. And then as it kind of moved on, it got a little bit easier to say like, hey, this is what it's about. And for us, I think it was a heart shift to say like, man, we want these kids to go back to their parents. Like, we want mom and dad. Like, we have been in rooms and we have walked out with kids after visitation and watched mom bawl her eyes out because mm-hmm. we're taking their mm-hmm. kids back to our home. Mm-hmm. And so it's created this shift to say like, hey, we want this. And I think we're in a season now where it's like, we're still open to fostering and saying yes. But it's God could move something and say, hey, I want you to adopt this child that's in your care. Yeah, that could happen. But we're really in a season right now where it's like, hey, we want to care for these kids and mm-hmm. help them. Even with this 4 and 5 year old that we're currently working with, we did a family call with mom. And for me, it's just, I just want to reassure mom that we want everything that's best for her son and her daughter. And we don't want her to think that we're trying to replace something or take mm-hmm. something away. And if there are things that we can do to make it better, like we can shape and mold this child so that when he goes back home in 9 months or whatever the time is, that mom gets a kid that, you know, has had that impact of our parenting on their lives. And so we're kind of in that place right now where it's like, we've gotten much more comfortable with wow. the like in and out of kids in and out of our home. It doesn't mean that you don't get attached because right. you, mm-hmm. you love these kids, but
it also gives you perspective on who God is in your life. And I think back to at the beginning, you said that you would have to apologize to so many people for how you thought something should be. And I think through that a lot because I often had the idea that I could help any child and I'm a good parent, I'm a good teacher, and this is how it should look to parent. And everything that I had in my toolbook has been thrown out because none of that actually works sometimes when you're working with kids with trauma. But it also gave me perspective on my relationship with the Lord, because when we consistently have issues arise and you're always having these little arguments with the child over like, hey, how come you're not getting this right? How come you're not growing? How come you're not showing us that you're trying? We want to see change in your behavior and we're not seeing it. It almost is like a smack in my face of that's what the Lord is saying to me. Hmm. And you go back in scripture and you see it with the Israelites and you see people being told over and over again. And you're always questioning, like, why do the Israelites do that? Why do they have to be told over and over? But then when you see it happening in your family with children, and then you start to look at your own heart and you really reflect, you realize that God is constantly saying the same thing over and over to me, mm-hmm. and I still can't get it right. And if he's willing to be a loving father to me through all of those things that we're navigating, then I need to be that way with my child. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a slap in the face, mm-hmm. you know, and
it creates empathy, right? Mm-hmm. Because for me, I would walk into, you know, the grocery store or Walmart, you know, pick your place. Yeah. And I would see a kid in the line having a meltdown. And I would think to myself, man, just parent
yeah.
the kid.
Yeah, you're right? not parenting right.
Like,
yeah.
Just snap your fingers.
My kids yeah. would never.
My kids right. would do that. Right. Yeah.
And then you sit in a line and your child is having a meltdown. Mm-hmm. And it's like, man, we're navigating right now with the 4 and 5 year old. we're in the last like 2+ weeks, we're on our second aftercare program where they have kicked him out of aftercare.
And they're kicking him out again.
And I walked in on Monday into this program, and it's like, I feel the weight of like what this child is doing in this moment, even though like the decisions that he's making are nothing that I have parented into this child. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. And so it gives you empathy for those people who are dealing with similar things to say, man, you have no idea the backstory. And for us, I think that was mm-hmm. like, that was one of the hardest things for us to get to the place where, yeah, we stopped caring what people thought.
That's
yeah,
the because hard
it's,
part.
It's yes. just so easy to sit there and this child is, you know, I just keep using that reference because it's tangible, but like the child is having a meltdown in the store and it's like, you know, everybody's looking at you and thinking the same thing that you would be thinking. And it's like, you feel that judgment and then you carry the weight of that. And it took us years to get to the place where we just had to take on the mentality of you have no idea what my shoes look like to walk in every single day. Mm-hmm. And if you want to think something, I'm good with that. And, yeah. and I don't care. Yeah. I don't care what you think about me or my kids. Yeah. Because I know what I'm dealing with and I know what we're doing to try and make this better. And so.
Hey friends, let's talk about real impact. Imagine a single mom struggling to keep her family together or a child sleeping on the floor because they don't have a bed. Now imagine you being able to meet that need. That's exactly what happens every day through Care Portal.
Care Portal is a platform that connects real-time needs from local children and families to people like you, churches and individuals who want to make a difference. With just a few clicks, you can step in, meet a need, and build a meaningful connection that changes lives.
This isn't just charity. It's the church and the community coming together, showing up in love and action. So if you're ready to turn compassion into action, visit careportal.org and see how you can be a part of the movement, because connection changes everything.
Visit careportal.org for more information on how to sign up and start meeting the needs of children and families in your own zip code. Once again, that's careportal.org.
Thank you, Care Portal, for sponsoring the Mended Futures podcast. So no matter your place on the river, and in Vision 30, we talk about the river, mm-hmm. that there's a place for everyone. You all are in the river, and you've just talked about how you've been in the river for 15 plus years fostering. No matter your place on the river, maybe you just start with more empathy or less judgment. Yep. So mm-hmm. as you're listening, and if you have a heart for what Sean and Aaron are talking mm-hmm. about, maybe just don't pass judgment the next time mm-hmm. you see the meltdown. And yep. as a former educator, I'm thinking as you're talking, foster children are very protected. You don't get to know their stories.
Yeah. It's, right.
You don't deserve to know those stories mm-hmm. unless you're a part of the care mm-hmm. plan. And when you do learn the stories, they will most often break your hearts. Mm-hmm. And you'll realize that children are so more resilient than they should ever have to be. So I commend you. Mm-hmm. And you know, that humiliation or that embarrassment, that's real. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to protect that very vulnerable child. And I would say it's probably easy to hide as foster families. It would just be easier not to go to the store mm-hmm. or just to keep them somewhere safe. So yeah. I have a lot of empathy for your stories.
And we would get to that place. So we, you know, we would implement rules that we would just say, hey, these are family rules to say, we know what happens when this happens. And so, you know, one of the rules with our youngest adopted daughter was, because we know how this can potentially go when we go into the stores, because it's an overwhelming environment for a mm-hmm. child, right? And it's so easy for a child to get dysregulated in that type of environment. And so it's like, hey, yeah, if we know that's the case, like, let's try not to put them in those types of environments. And so, yeah, the only time that we would go shopping, you know, with her as a part of what we were doing was if both of us were together. Mm-hmm. And if we were both together, if something happened, then, you know, one of us could respond, we could remove, we could do those things. Yeah. But specifically with her, like we just created a rule. She was never allowed to go shopping by herself because if something went sideways, now she's alone and she's trying to figure out how to navigate that. But if it's possible, let's try to avoid those overstimulating mm-hmm. environments that are mm-hmm. going to dysregulate and trigger and all the mm-hmm. different things.
Wow.
Yeah. And we have to do things differently. Going back to the part of not caring what others think, I think even in our decisions on family trips or who we take, or even sometimes doing some just bio, like just our bio children need a little bit of time with us because we wanted to navigate those relationships well too. It meant choosing to do something that the general public might look at and say, well, you're not being fair to your adopted daughter. You're not being fair to your bio daughter or whatever it is. We had to make those choices based on what God was calling us to do as a family without worrying over what everybody else in society is going to think. Right. And I think as foster families, you have to make those calls, and it might look very different from what everybody else is doing. Even in your parenting strategies, and you know, sometimes humor is great, right? Mm-hmm. Humor just brings so much peace at times. And so we would often use humor and joking and parts of our ways to communicate to our kids. And mm-hmm. that may not be what everybody else mm-hmm. does, but you're finding ways to navigate those relationships in a way that works for your family. Mm-hmm.
And back to the original question, you know, of what we've learned on this journey, you know, it can be easy for us to sit around the table and talk about like all of the negative things, right? Yeah. And I don't want someone to listen to this and walk away with that, mm-hmm. you know, because God has written just incredible stories through this journey. Mm-hmm. Our youngest daughter who we adopted, you know, there were moments where we felt like, man, what is her future going to look like? How is she going to, you know, survive? And there were key things that we had to do to bring her healing and helps. But man, yeah, today she is in such a better place, and yeah, she's happy and she's smiling and she's a vital part of our family. And those moments that like would have been triggering, you know, we're able to do things like, When she was younger, the idea of going to Disney would be an impossible thought, right? Mm-hmm. It's the most overstimulating environment in the entire world, probably.
For adults. Too.
Yes, for sure. Mm-hmm. And it's like she has grown so much that now she's able to do things like that. You know, we had a 12-year-old middle school boy that we took into our home for a year. And he came into our home, and I'll never forget my initial conversation. Mm-hmm. So when I picked him up at social services, the very first question, he didn't want to know my name. He didn't want to know anything about what we did. Mm-hmm. He just looked at me and he said, "This isn't one of them sports families, is it? Because I don't do sports."
Oh my gosh.
I was like, that's an odd question. But one of the things that we do with Mosaic is we build bags that kids get when they come into care. And so, yeah, we're also, even though I get to help lead that ministry, I'm also a beneficiary of that. And so when I picked him up, he had gotten one of these Mosaic bags. And so in the bag, there was a football and he thought it came from me. So he thought that he was going to show up to our house and it was going to be all football and outdoors. And that was not his thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the beautiful thing is, yeah, once he got into our home, he started hanging out with my son. Like I would find him out on the driveway and they were playing basketball and they would throw the football around. And yeah, as a result of him being a part of our church and being a part of our student ministries that we were doing there, yeah, he had a small group leader that invested in him and just said, "Hey, could I show up once a week to the house and just take him to McDonald's and mm-hmm. invest in him?" And over one of those conversations, he led him to Christ. Yeah. And so there are so many positive things that we look back on this journey and we just say, man, we can see God's hand. We can see how he was moving and what he was doing. And we're still continuing to see that.
We really feel that. We've spent a lot. It's interesting. When we got the call for the current children that we have, it was the same day that we got the email from you asking us to speak on foster care.
Wow.
Which is interesting. And it also centered around a time of fasting and prayer where God was really speaking to me personally about sacrifice, like full sacrifice and what that looked like. And I think Sean had been kind of in a similar situation where God had just been really teaching him some things about what it looks like to really give up your time for others and sacrifice. And So we got that call and it was like, there's no way that we can do this. Like the way our house is set up, the way things are, I just don't know how we're going to navigate it. And we're processing through it. And we're talking to our children who are currently in our home, our five children, three bio, two adopted. And we're saying, what do you guys think? And we're kind of coming back and forth a little bit. I'm like, it's so interesting that we were asked to do this podcast. It's interesting how this is lining up. I think we're supposed to say yes, but then I'm like, we can't. We need to say no. And my youngest daughter, she heard me say that on the way to school, which I love drives to school. That's where you hear everything, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she says, Mom, I can't believe you would say no. There's so many families that have less support network and less space than us that say yes.
And don't know how to help.
Yeah, and don't know how to help kids like this. How in the world would you say no? And then she started quoting scripture to me. And it's like challenging us, right? And so I'm like, okay, we're supposed to say yes. And we were also like, we were traveling for a funeral in California. He had a trip planned to Turkey for a missions trip. I had a trip planned with the school. I mean, we had so many things to navigate. It was like, there's no way. So we're calling back. We're like, we can, but we have this, this, and this. And like the social services were like, we'll work with you. We're going to provide this. We're going to provide that. And then our community came through with support. And my prayer during my fast time was just like, God, if we're going to do this, you're going to have to just provide. And you would not believe just story after story in the last even just 2 weeks where, hey, this daycare is not going to take him anymore. And the next day I had a backup.
Wow.
And that doesn't happen. Wow. Or, hey, he really needs a medication and a doctor to see him at the psychiatrist. And, hey, we've got an appointment at 4:00. You want it? Like, that doesn't happen.
Right.
You have to take months, you know, to get into some of these appointments. And so the community, the support, and really the prayers, right? And the Holy Spirit working for us and saying, I'm going to hold you up. I'm going to lift your arms up. We've been just recipients of that. Mm-hmm. You know,
I love that because oftentimes we as community leaders, we as helpers, we as people along the river are trying to give other people the opportunity to get closer to the miracles. What you were describing there, the miracles are in the mess.
Yes.
You get closer to the river and they're not coincidence.
Right.
They are not coincidence when the appointment comes open and when, you know, when these great things start to happen, you're going to see things differently when you work with widows and orphans.
It's funny that you say mess because my very first post about this experience was saying yes to the mess because that really is what you're doing. Like it is chaotic, but there's a level of organization to the chaos. You know, there are people there to support you through the mess, right? But we have to say yes to the mess. We have to know that when a babysitter walks into our house to help us, that even though 10 minutes before she arrived, it was clean, now because one of them had a fit, it's a complete tornado zone, you know? And so it's like being able to say, we don't care about that mess. It'll be okay. Yeah. This is the life we've signed up for and God's going to protect and provide.
And back to the river, you know, Aaron mentioned, I got the opportunity to go to Turkey a couple of weeks ago and meet with believers that are on the ground that are literally sacrificing everything. And we met a guy who he was a big time soccer player in Iran. And in a match, he got a legal tackle and it tore all the ligaments and dislocated his knee. And the doctors walked in and said, you're never going to play soccer again. He had two friends that were believers and followers of Jesus that had been trying to share Christ with him. And he just refused because he was a devout Muslim. And they showed up at the hospital and he was so desperate, crying out to Allah saying, why would you take this away from me? That when they showed up and said, hey, we know you don't want to hear, but could we just come in and pray in Jesus's name? Would you let us do that? He said, yes. And they came in and prayed and his entire leg was healed. All the ligaments, bones, everything reformed. 2 days later, he's playing soccer when they told him he would never play again. And I'm sharing that story with my son and he's like, why do you think that, like, because when you look at the global picture, a lot of people are coming to faith in South Asia and in countries like Iran and Iraq and India through miraculous signs and wonders. And he was like, why don't you think we see that in the States? And it was like, I started thinking through it. And it was like, if you're going to make a decision to follow Jesus, and it might cost you everything. And in this case, for this guy, it cost him everything. Mm-hmm. If you're going to follow that and you're going to give that up, he better be able to walk into a room and heal a leg, right? Mm-hmm. He should have that kind of power. And I think the closer that we get to like faith being challenging and difficult, mm-hmm. the more that we have to rely on the power of God and the more that we see his miracles, because we're not trying to accomplish it on our own. Because we look back in the stuff that we have experienced and that we've seen and the growth that we've seen in our children, like it was the miracle of God that mm-hmm. that some of these things happened.
Nothing
and
to
it
do
was
with
because
us.
We just had to get close. You know, we had to get deep into the river and say, like, man, our dependency on God is so heavy right now in this moment that we can't move unless he tells us to. And so that's kind of been how we've navigated that.
Wow.
That's beautiful. As you were talking a little while ago, I wrote down, are you seeing the harvest? Because I'm always thinking about, if I had to tell anyone in this region, anyone in this world to do something, just sow the seeds.
Yeah.
Just mm-hmm. keep sowing the seeds. So my question was going mm-hmm. to be, are you seeing the harvest? Mm-hmm. And you're totally seeing the harvest. The youngest daughter mm-hmm. telling you to say yes. Yes. The, you know, all the things that you've just told us. And there have been a lot of people that have sat on this couch who have talked about foster care, who have talked about their personal stories. And hopefully I can say this without crying. The overwhelming theme from the people who are talking about mended futures and talking about getting in the river is within a generation, they are seeing remarkable change. Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about financial literacy and yes. and the whatever your tagline was, mm-hmm. something about generation.
Igniting generational yes. change. Yes.
I love that because mm-hmm. as an educator, I've seen it too. Yeah. You have to look for it and you have to be brave enough to know that the most vulnerable children,
yeah.
you might actually see the harvest. You may never see it,
yeah.
but keep sowing the seeds. And I love that there's a theme of, so with in less than a generation, you're seeing some miraculous things happening.
And we have to be reminded of that sometimes. Our daughter's therapist that helped her navigate a lot of her teenage years, we would feel like down as parents, like we're not doing a good enough job and we're still like struggling through these issues. And she would just have to sit down with us and she would say, let me tell you about her trajectory. This is where she should be. Mm-hmm. She should be 16 and pregnant. Mm-hmm. She should be raising a child. She should be doing all these things. And she's 19 going on 20, about to graduate with her associate's degree and then hopefully transfer into Liberty. And it's like, this was the path that she was walking, because historically you mm-hmm. look at her family and mm-hmm. everybody in her family, that was the path mm-hmm. that they walked. And it's just that subtle reminder that, like, sometimes it's not even big, huge things. It's just the little things. It's my daughter who, you know, for 7 years never smiled in our house, looking over the corner and catching a smile. Like mm-hmm. it's those little things that it's like, okay, I can begin to see that, like, that generational change and that impact is starting to happen in our family.
Wow. I love the transition to the little things, because that's kind of where my heart lies. I love very practical, like, do the exact next right thing. What's the yeah. what's the mm-hmm. next step, and
like
we'll see what happens after.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes, that's my favorite.
Yes. Since you guys are so articulate and generous with your experiences and your story, I would love to know, on behalf of people who are looking to get into fostering, who are kind of nervous about that first initial contact, when children first come into your home, what's your advice for the first day mm. of a placement?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
A few things. Not assuming anything, And we've done it a few different times and probably done it wrong plenty of times. And sometimes it's all about where we are at the time when we get the call and how fast we can get to a place to provide comfort. So it's looked very different for us, but letting them kind of warm, you know, and just come to you and not you like being all over them. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of it. They're going to be in different journeys as to how they navigate relationships with you. For example, this one, these two that came in right away, the minute they entered our home, they called us mom and dad. Mm. And we were very hesitant about that and wanted to be like, no, call us Mr. Sean or Miss Aaron or mm-hmm. Sean or Aaron. We didn't want them to feel like they had to call us mom and dad, but they just did. And there's nothing we could do. And we're just going to let that fly, right? Mm-hmm. Let it slide. Mm-hmm. Because it's what's comfortable to them. And then we tried with our first ones, with the girls, when they came in to our home to also navigate, we're navigating race, mm-hmm. hairstyle, mm-hmm. How to do their hair. I mean, there's a lot of things to consider. So just being open to understanding that how they did things might be very different from how you've done things in your home. And just watching for, like, if they say, oh, my mom always used a comb, you know, then mm-hmm. I'm going to go find that comb and buy that comb, right? Mm-hmm. Or baby dolls, like we had baby dolls that were their skin color mm-hmm. on their bed, you mm-hmm. know, when they came in.
And I would say, I would say, take a deep breath.
Yes.
Because the first several weeks are the most challenging part of the entire journey. And I can remember when we took the girls in that we would eventually adopt, I remember pulling my phone out and just saying, hey Siri, what does my week look like? And Siri said, you have 17 appointments this week. And then Siri felt the need to commentate. Siri felt the need to commentate and said, wow, that's quite a lot. Uh-huh. And I remember thinking to myself, yes,
it is.
You were right. Because, you know, there's doctor's appointments and dental appointments and all the things that you have to do as you're making these transitional periods. You're learning about who the kids are. You're navigating like how they're going to fit into your space. And so sometimes you just need to take a deep breath and realize that, like, once you get through that initial phase, things will get better. You'll start to learn more. You'll start to learn how to navigate all the challenges. With this latest placement that we have, through this whole entire journey, I have always felt God's presence and God's hope in every yes that we have said. We had a day several weeks ago where I was by myself, and I finished that day up. And for the first time in this journey, I felt, man, I have no hope. Like, I don't have hope that I am going to be able to impact change in this kid's life. And I never felt that way, but it was just some of the behaviors and things were so overwhelming that I couldn't see a way through. And we're 3-4 weeks to the other side. And it's like, my perspective has shifted so much just in that little window, because like now, like I've begun to know how to navigate with him. I know like what works to lock his attention back in. I know how I'm going to be able to get his mind off of this and onto something else, because I'm learning those things. And if I had just taken that snippet of that moment in that first week, we probably would have said, we can't handle this. And so breathe deep.
Can we dig into that a little bit? Because if a pastor and a pastor's wife, so a couple, you've been together for decades, this is not your first rodeo. If you are feeling like you have no hope, mm-hmm. what do you do then? I mean, mm-hmm. I know that Waymaker just opened the doors to have a pretty major couple of days or 24 hours of intercessory prayer. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So I like Taylor's question, but I want to go more granular, because what if I'm not ready to foster?
Yeah.
How can people pray for you? Mm-hmm. What else could people do? Like, I think of Sound of Hope, Story of Possum Trot. Asking a family to bring children into their home is a huge ask. Yeah. What are some smaller steps? Like, I may not be ready to open my heart mm-hmm. and my home to foster care.
Yep.
But I can certainly, I'm going to pray for you after this, because mm-hmm. now I know you and I've heard your heart. But tell the people how to pray for foster mm-hmm. parents. Tell the folks out there, mm-hmm. what is the smallest first step mm-hmm. that you could do?
Yeah, so I would say the easiest thing that you can do is get in the sphere and the world of a foster family. So you don't have to be the one that's saying yes, But these families need people to come alongside of them and say, hey, I'm going to help you out with some little things. And little things can be like, hey, I'm going to bring a meal over once a week. It might be like, hey, I have a little bit of free time. When we talk about the Siri and the calendar thing, 17 appointments, it's like the day-to-day stuff, like I can't do it. Yeah. So it's like, how am I going to mow the yard this week? Mm-hmm. Like, man, you could come over and you could do that. You could get into the world so that you begin to see, because what it does is it destigmatizes the idea of foster care, mm-hmm. right? And that idea that I had years and years ago about, man, these families are crazy and all of this, mm-hmm. like you begin to get a glimpse into the world of what's actually going on and happening. So do little things to come alongside with them and say like, I want to help out here. You know, maybe it's, and this is case specific because every kid is a little bit different what you can do as far as babysitting, but it could be, hey, we want you guys to have a night out. So mm-hmm. what if we showed up at the house and we just took care of the kids early on? And this is, you know, especially I'll speak on behalf of my wife. I know it can be embarrassing. We had people that showed up to our house and just said, hey, we're going to do your laundry.
Mm-hmm. But as like, a bio parent, you still have those moments,
yes,
you know,
for sure.
But as a foster, I may not be brave enough to do what you're doing,
yeah.
But there are people who are going to listen that can think of foster families like, okay, I could bake bread mm-hmm. or I could drop off groceries yep. or I could call Aaron and say, would you like a coffee? Or
yeah.
There's some men that live for mowing grass. Yes. You know, yeah. I could call Sean. You know, to me, that's an easy yep. first step. So thank you for giving some yeah. tangible, practical.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And from a prayer standpoint, like the thing that I would say is ask the family specifically what is going on, mm-hmm. because what begins to happen when you pray specifically for a family is it begins to shift your heart towards that family. If you're generically praying, like that's great. Yeah. But I'm not sure that necessarily is going to shift your heart towards the family. Yeah. When you're asking them, hey, what's going on? And I can say, man, yeah, here's what we're navigating with our 5-year-old. And right now, the biggest thing that I need in my world is patience.
Mm-hmm. If or you could aftercare. Pay,
yes.
Aftercare,
right.
That's right.
And, you know, I was just thinking that.
And
it
is. And I think part of the reason why we were able to get those things so easily is because we have a network of people that we're connected with that when those moments happen, we just mm-hmm. like, we've gotten to the place where we are very transparent. And so when there's a need, we let our community know, hey, here's what's going on. And there are times where I feel like, man, maybe I overshare with my community. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I want them to know what's going on so they can pray specifically. And so we've got people who are praying with us saying like, hey, they need help with aftercare. So we're going to pray specifically that request is met. And I think, again, that creates empathy towards the family. You get to know a little bit more about their story. And it just gives you a better picture of what it's like to foster. Hmm.
And I will say, too, we live in an area where people have been very generous with their time. And it was really neat how God arranged it. But I had happened to work in the I do our dreamers at our church, which is just what, you know, watching the babies mm-hmm. during one of the services. And one of the young college students that worked in the room heard us praying over mm-hmm. our situation. And she reached out. She said, I want to bring you a meal. Can I clean your house? I mean, this is a college student, but she's like, I have a dorm full of women that could come and help.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, I'm not ready yet for you to come clean my house. I don't even know you, you know,
yeah.
But a meal sounds great, you know, but we have like, we're a family of 9 now. That's a lot for a college yeah. student. And mm-hmm. she was like, no, we'll all pitch in and we'll do it.
That's
and
amazing.
She did. And then connected with her and she said, I would love to help babysit. And so we're like, okay, so we brought her over to babysit the other night because we had a choir concert to go to, and we knew that this child could not sit through a choir concert. And I said, okay, come over, be here at 5. Well, we were in the middle of a storm, really. Mm-hmm. There was some stuff happening, and I thought, she's not going to be able to do this. Mm-hmm. And we just said, look, you can go home. You do not have to stay. One of us will stay home. We'll figure it out. And she said, no, I'm going to school for this. I'm mm-hmm. trying to learn how to work with these children, and wow. I'm willing to do it. And I know it will be hard, but I'm here to do it. And she did. Sure enough, she and on top of it, she cleaned my kitchen, you know,
wow.
and put yeah. the kids to bed,
and put the kids to sleep, which every mom knows. Like, wow. if you come home to your kids asleep, a winner, you know? Yeah. So a college kid, a college student, you know? And so that was really inspiring to me because I don't know if I would have picked up on all of that at her age.
Right. You know? I have one more question, and then we can get back on the script.
I know. Sorry. No, we love talking to you guys. Yes. You're really amazing.
Do you ever say no?
Yes.
Yes. We went through a season when we were navigating, you know, probably the hardest season with our daughters that we adopted. And it was like, they need so much of our focus and attention right now that even if they called us, we couldn't say yes. Yeah. Cause if we said yes, it was going to be at a detriment to them. So there was a season where we just had to like step back and tell DSS like, hey, we're not done. Yeah. But for this season, we just can't, our yes is going to be a no every time you call.
Well, and I think I like to spin things positively. You're still saying yes. You're still saying yes to the daughters that you've adopted. You know, that you're still saying yes to your call. And so you may be saying no to adding something else or adding another child into the mix, but you're still saying yes.
And I think that's something that I would tell parents, like as they're thinking about doing this, especially when, and this is not always the case, but when the case becomes an adoption case, and obviously the goal is always reunification. Like they want to get kids back in their home. But when it turns into an adoption case, as you're weighing that and trying to figure out, do I say yes to adoption? So I said yes to foster care, but there's a next step. Yeah, I think you have to know that that yes is going to continue probably for the rest of your life.
Oh, yeah. Right. So, I mean, even when their kids, when they have kids and their kids have kids, like they are yours forever.
Right.
And you know, you talked about breaking those generational strongholds. Yeah. The truth is those strongholds are very, very strong. And so like, we just know that there are certain things that we are going to navigate with our oldest adopted daughter that we may not have to navigate with our son, because of what she grew up in and experienced. And, you know, you can get into the debate about like nature versus nurture, but
or
because
epigenetics.
Of the,
have you studied that?
Yes, for sure.
Wow. The fact that your trauma could actually alter your genetics, but that your healing could alter your genetics.
Our son is a biotech major, but he's studying a lot of things like that. And they had a whole conversation about epigenetics recently.
Yeah, because I'm very big on like brain structure and mapping. And obviously when a child that has experienced this level of trauma, their brain gets rewired, right? And the thing that I've always struggled with is it possible to undo that wiring? And as I read and I study and I've read books by Dr. Amen, and I've read The Body Keeps the Score and like some of those books that really deal with trauma, the more that I read, the more that I just see that if we invest, if we do the right things, if we help our kids, like we can begin to unwire those areas that were destroyed by the trauma that they experienced and rewire a new pathways in their brain. And so
it is so hopeful when you look at it that way. But, you know, on the other hand, when you know better, you do better. I didn't realize that kids who experience trauma when they're not old enough to talk hold trauma differently, and maybe even the brain is rewired more significantly. You would think that babies don't hold on to trauma or toddlers don't hold on to trauma, but that if you are nonverbal when you experience the trauma, that it's almost more. So I love the science behind. I also love to hear you as a pastor, as Christians, talk about therapy and talk about mental health. Absolutely. Because it is going to take the entire village to wrap around the children and the families to heal.
Yeah, we're grateful for the therapists that we've had and their impact in our children's lives. Like both of our adopted girls, but also our family as a whole has experienced blessings from the therapy that we've received, for sure.
So we know that you're contributing to Men of Futures for your kids and your children's children's children.
And your village.
But where do you guys come from, you know? Do you have stories of Mended Futures yourself?
Are you the product of a Mended Future?
I feel like I'm I'm one of those children that as I've grown, I've realized more and more how just very fortunate and blessed I was to grow up in a family that had maybe already mended some stuff in their past, but didn't really spread a lot of generational trauma into mm-hmm. my life. And instead, they really gifted me with such a path towards blessings and understanding who God is. I mean, we haven't been without our struggles. Like my dad had cancer and passed away from it when I was 18, and I had younger siblings at the time. And we certainly have had like stuff happen in our life that was difficult, but I also just recipient of, you know, generations of pastors and Christian worldview and love for life and laughter and fun. And just like seeing that in like my grandparents, my mom, like, you know, just the love of life that they have sent towards us as children has been really, really such a blessing. And so I think as I've gotten older, I've realized more how good I had it. You know, I'm sure like I remember being a teenager and thinking, oh, my parents are the worst, you know, at times or saying things in an ungrateful tone or not understanding really how good I had it.
Mm-hmm. And our parents now, are parenting.
Yes. And now like I just see it as such a blessing to help ground us in our faith so that we are able to hopefully contribute to other generations. What, you know, it's not to say there hasn't been stuff, you know, but I would say mostly
you had a strong foundation,
very good foundation. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. And I really feel the same way. I think the biggest thing for this journey that it's helped me with is how do I love better? And not the family that I grew up in and my parents that I didn't experience love. Yeah. But it's like, man, how do I love the way that Christ loves? Mm-hmm. And this every single day has taught me to be better at that. And I think, you know, part of the reason why we wanted to get into this, and it's the argument that our daughter gave us, is that we both had such great families growing up. That loved us, cared for us, provided for us, that provided a really great future for us, that we just said, man, we want to pour that into other kids, and we want to help mend futures of kids that we've never even met before. And I just, like, I think about this 5-year-old and 4-year-old that are with us. While it can be challenging right now, I think like if they're with us for 9 months to a year, whatever that window is, that looks like, man, how different is their path going to be because they spent a year in our family? How different is their path going to be because they had, you know, my son who's 20, my daughter who's 19, our other daughters investing and pouring into them and saying, man, here's what an older sister or brother looks like. You know, we want to give them those things. And it's the argument that our daughter gave us, which is like, hey, we know what it looks like to mend somebody's future. So why would we not say yes? Why would we not be the ones? And it's not from a place of arrogance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I never want anybody to feel that way, that we have all the answers. But it's like when we looked at the challenges and we're trying to navigate, man, are we going to continue to say yes? Or is this too much for us? Like, have we reached the point where this is a case where we can't say yes? I just started processing through my head other families that I know love Jesus. And I imagined those kids in that home. And it was like, dude, I don't know how they would do that, because with God's grace, he has given us a lot of experiences to walk into a room and see a kid behave a certain way and know that behavior is not who the kid is, right? Mm-hmm. It's a product of the environment that they grew up in. It's a product of how their brain has been rewired. And that kid is not the trauma, right? And that's a difficult place to get to. And as a family, we have navigated that. And so we just said, man, we want to be a part of helping kids write better stories, giving them brighter futures. And so that's really, I think, why we said yes to begin with.
Wow. In closing, can you say a little bit about Waymakers Foster Care Ministry? Yeah. If there is someone listening, because there are partners all over the region that want to pour into helping families who are brave enough
to say yes, yeah. who have the calling and listen to the calling. So if there's a family listening and they feel like they need extra support or yeah. they're interested in the process and want to take the first next step, what's going on at your church and how can they plug in?
Yeah, that's amazing. So the thing that I love so much about what we get to do from a Mosaic standpoint is everything that we do, excuse me, that falls under that banner of Mosaic exists outside of the church. So when we created Mosaic, we just said, man, we want to do something that we are just giving away to the community. So when you look at all the events and the things that we get to do from that standpoint, probably 75% of the people who take advantage of these resources do not even call Waymaker Church home.
Yeah.
Now we have around 45 families in our church that have said yes to foster care and adoption.
Wow.
Whoa.
That's amazing.
Okay, pause. That's huge.
Yes. It is.
It is. That is absolutely huge. That's almost possum trot numbers when you think of.
Well, it speaks to the heart of what the church is trying to instill and the support that the church has given.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I would just want anybody who's listening to know that those resources exist to help families in the community. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that is designed specifically for Waymaker Church, that it is a community resource. And so you're going to hopefully see, depending on where the partnerships are, praise the Lord, Isaiah 117 House has come in. Mm-hmm. And they're in Lynchburg, they're trying to put us out of business. And I love it because they have direct access right there that they can love on those families. But you're going to see a lot of those bags if you're in Campbell County, Bedford County, and other areas. We have our Mosaic Meals program. When you have that placement, and really we'll do it at any time. We usually just provide a week's worth of meals during that transitional period because it is the most difficult. We want to provide meals for you. We have our Mosaic night out event that's coming up. So if you go to mosaic127.org, that's where our Mosaic page is. You go in there, you can find meals. You can, if it's something that you're interested in, even if you're not a part of our church, that you're interested in being a part of and volunteering and doing that, we would love to have you jump in with us on that. So you'll see kind of who we are, ways that as foster parents, you can take advantage of some of those resources. And then also, if you want to get plugged in from a volunteer standpoint, we can help you take those next steps.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah.
I've taken a lot from what you guys have shared. So
appreciate that.
Thank you for all that you do.
Yes.
Thanks.
Thank you.
God is in this room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you for listening to the Mended Futures podcast, hosted by Allison Jordan and Taylor Melvin, produced by Liam Chafin, Sue England, Allison Jordan, Robert Day, Sully Jugar, and Taylor Melvin. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to like, share, and subscribe to see more.